Hello, I'm Keith Powell, and welcome to the best of Media Network Plus, as we go back into the archives and bring you some of the best programs from the production run of the program. Today we go back to August 27th, 2011, with a special interview with Nigel Holmes. Nigel was, for many years, the frequency manager at Radio Australia. It should be noted that some of the news and information given in the program is out of date, but we present this as a sound document.
This is station PCJ.
This is the son of PCJ. Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Hello, everyone. It's very nice to have you with us for another edition of the show. This week, I'm flying solo because Paulette is acting like a tour guide. What's all that about? Well, maybe she'll tell us next week. Anyway, coming up on today's program, we bring you part one of a lengthy conversation that I had with Nigel Holmes, the frequency manager of Radio Australia, one of the most respected international broadcasters in the Asia-Pacific region. And then later on in the program, Dan Hensley joins us for his weekly propagation report. Media Network Plus, we promise to connect loop antennas and dipole antennas and long wire antennas to your ears. What will happen? We'll have to wait and see. But first, we take a look at some of the headlines happening in the world of communications. Employees of the Maui Broadcasting Corporation have threatened to go on strike to force management to improve their working conditions and disparities in salaries between those working from the television sector and those working in the radio sector. MBC established a parliamentary act, was previously operating as Radio 1 and Radio 2 before merging with Maui Television last July, and adopted the name of MBC for both services. Currently, MBC, a state-controlled television and radio broadcaster, has around 700 employees after the merger, and the government is currently working towards trimming down the workforce to 413, a move that has brought uncertainty to the workers. Bush Radio, a community station based in the Western Cape of South Africa for the last 20 years, is facing closure unless it can urgently find needed funds to support its business. It is not only a radio station but provides broadcasting training to individuals, radio stations and media institutions in Africa, with special focus on Southern Africa. From campaigning against the apartheid government for a free and independent broadcasting authority, to being present at Cape Town's Grand Parade when Nelson Mandela addressed the nation as free man, it has played an important part in building a new South Africa. Over the past 3 years, this pioneering radio station and training center has been hit hard by the current economic climate, recently resulting in having to reevaluate its operations in order to remain sustainable and influential in this fast-changing and exciting environment. It is trying to raise $43,000, around 300,000 rand, to pay rent, transmission, and other running costs, and needs concrete proposals by August 31st. The Australian Press Council is developing plans to regulate news and current affairs commentary across all platforms, including radio, television, and blogs. At present, the Council's role is limited to print publications. Broadcast regulation is provided by the Australian Communications and Media Authority, while the Internet is unregulated. The Press Council's plan to increase its role to set standards and handle complaints about news and opinion material, no matter which platform it is published on, is expected to be submitted to the federal government for inquiry. Russia said it lost track of a newly launched multi-million dollar telecommunications satellite. The latest in a series of setbacks have dodged its space industry. The 265 million Express AM-4 satellite, described by its makers as the most powerful satellite ever built in Europe, launched last week aboard a Proton-M rocket from the Russian leased launch pad in Kazakhstan. The Russian Space Agency said the first stages of the launch went smoothly, but communication with the satellite was lost due to a failure of the BRISM upper stage. It said experts were working to reestablish contact with the craft, a unit that was built by a subsidiary of the European aerospace group EDAS, to provide digital television, internet, and telecommunications services to Russia over the next 15 years. The spacecraft was fully insured for 7.5 billion rubles. Judging from earlier efforts, officials have roughly a 75% chance of linking back to the satellite and maneuvering it into the correct orbit, space industry expert Igor Lisov told Reuters. Its loss would be a nightmare for the Russian industry, he said, delaying key commercial projects for 3 to 4 years and embarrassing Moscow at a time when it is hoped it can showcase its technology at the Marx Air Show outside the capital. A special thank you goes to Andy Sennett at Radio Netherlands Worldwide at the Media Network blog for the stories used. To find their link, just go to our website, www.pcjmedia.com, and click on the link for Media Network.
This is Paulette Demchuk-McQuarrie inviting you to join me every week for Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio on the PCJ Radio Network. Details at www.pcjmedia.com and www.ukrainianrootsradio.com.
And by the way, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio. Now, a long, long time ago, when I started listening to international broadcasting in the late 1970s and 1980s, I would listen to many different stations. There was, of course, the BBC World Service, Deutsche Welle, Radio Nederland, Swiss Radio International, Radio Sweden, and many others. But one station that I would tune in daily in the mornings was Radio Australia. And I still remember the frequency, 9580 kilohertz, a frequency that today many listeners in North America and other parts of the world tune into. Now, 9580 is not targeted to North America, it never has been, but it provides such a clear signal that it is excellent to listen to. So how does Radio Australia do it? Because they predominantly target the Asia-Pacific region. Now, here in Taiwan, I can literally tune to Radio Australia from the early morning hours until the late morning hours, almost the entire day, in fact, to a clear AM-quality signal. But how does that signal manage to reach other areas of the world that it's not targeted? Well, of course, that's the magic of shortwave. But it's not just shortwave itself. It has to do with fantastic antenna design and technical engineers who know what they're doing. My guest on today's program is Nigel Holmes, the frequency manager of Radio Australia, to tell us more about it.
Asia and the Pacific. You're listening to Radio Australia.
Radio Australia, 24 hours a day in English and also in Chinese.
这里是澳洲广播电台 Radio Australia.
Indonesian.
Saudara sudah mendengarkan siaran dari Radio Australia.
Khmer.
Mekijia semlai terbahagia Australia semalamban asli Pacific.
Pijun.
Welcome now. Long Talk is in broadcast. Become Long Radio Australia.
And Vietnamese.
Quý vị đang nghe chương trình của Đài Phát thanh Úc Châu.
For tuning and program guides, go to abc.net.au/ra.
How has Radio Australia been able to reach an audience in areas that they don't target? For example, I remember when I first heard Radio Australia many years ago when I was still living in Canada. I still remember the frequency. It was 9580. There's people that I know now who say that 9580 still comes in super clear. It even comes in clearer than stations broadcasting from Europe to North America. How do you do it?
Is a little bit hard to explain because, in the first instance, it's a broadcast aimed to Radio Australia's audience is in the Pacific. It's an evening transmission, so it goes out around about 08 UT through until about 1400 UT. And, of course, once you unleash your shortwave signal, it doesn't stop. Once it's serviced the target area, it keeps on going until physics takes over. It's always propagated well from Shepparton in southeast Australia, travelling northwest across the Pacific Ocean into North America. It's always worked well throughout the solar cycle. Being an evening transmission, I think, gives it some measure of resilience against solar activity fluctuations. Normally, when you're shooting out... did I say northwest? I did. I meant northeast, of course, from Shepparton into North America. Normally, when you're shooting into the east, you run into problems, particularly in the morning. Broadcasting into the rising sun is the most difficult aspect for broadcasting. But for our evening broadcasts, the attenuation seems, the propagation loss seems to be quite low. And it's a clear channel. A clear channel is probably 90% of achieving a reliable service. More recently, we have had some problems from broadcasts within 15 or 20 kilohertz of 9580, but generally it works well. Now, some of our other broadcasts, which work pretty well, are by design. For example, most international shortwave broadcasters aim to make their signals available for about 90% of the time. So if you listened over 10 days, you'd get a good signal on 9 of those days. What I do is use a slightly higher frequency than most transmission managers would recommend, slightly higher than the various propagation programs like VOA CAP or ASAPS, the Australian modelling program, would recommend. So where they say that the optimum working frequency is, for example, 9.5 megahertz, I might use a frequency in the 25 meter band and 11 megahertz frequency. And the reason for that is twofold. First of all, you'll get slightly less propagation attenuation by using the higher frequency. And possibly more importantly, you'll get less mixed mode and multi-mode propagation. So in other words, if, for example, between Shepparton and Fiji, I could have a 2F circuit on a particular frequency or a 3F circuit on another frequency with a slightly higher takeoff angle, I would try and force a 2F mode, or what we call the first mode. The first mode is the one that has the least number of F-layer ionospheric hops involved. And the reason for that is so that I don't get a multi-mode propagation where there's some 2F and some 3F coming down in the same target area. And this can happen depending on the radiation characteristics of the antenna. I try and use a frequency that, if tried to propagate on the 3F mode, which would require a higher takeoff angle, the ionosphere wouldn't sustain that 3F mode and the signal would go into outer space instead. So that subjectively improves the signal-to-noise ratio of a lot of the Radio Australia signals. What it also means, Keith, is that, and a number of listeners and other people have commented about this in the last few years, I've used frequencies quite high up in the HF spectrum, higher than people would have thought that I'd use during solar minimum, and that is to basically try to force a first mode propagation path onto our signals and give us the best signal to noise ratio that we can do. You're quite right when you say that our Radio Australia's a long way away from a lot of these target areas. When we're broadcasting, for example, on 17750 kilohertz into Southeast Asia, and I know that's a frequency that you receive quite well in Taiwan, that signal goes out from Shepparton on about 329 degrees out to the northwest. It goes through Darwin at the top of Australia, and that's over 3,000 kilometres away. So I have to go 3,000 kilometres before I'm even out of Australia. So many of the international broadcasters would regard that as a maximum range for their broadcasts. And I'm doing this with a 100 kilowatt transmitter too. too, not a 250 kilowatt transmitter. So that's why I keep using that higher frequency when other broadcasters might use a 15 megahertz or a 13 megahertz frequency. I try and use the highest frequency that the path will sustain for about 85% of the time.
You see, because when I tune to 1775 kilohertz from probably around 10 o'clock in the morning local time until when it signs off at 7 hours UTC, the thing that I'm surprised about, which it mystifies me, because there's other broadcasters I know that are targeting this area, and they sound, you know, what would be the stereotypical really bad quality shortwave signal, but the Radio Australian one, most days, sounds like just as clear as any even local AM radio station. It's that clear.
Oh, that's both heartening news, Keith, and I'm also a little curious. I wonder if those other broadcasters are using optimum audio processing. At Shepparton, we've used for the past 10 or 15 years, probably closer to 20 years, we've used audio processors called MBL-100s. These were made by CRL, which I think was bought out by Auburn, or did Auburn get bought out by CRL? I can never quite remember. And the MBL-100s, in keeping with a lot of the modern audio processors, are quite cunning devices, and you can only use them with modern transmitters, which have DC-coupled or digital modulation systems. They provide very good processing that really increases the average power in our sidebands of our transmitters. Apart from that, the transmitters themselves, they're nothing special until 6 months or so ago. Shepparton was using transmitters that were over 30 years old and probably representing a 40-year-old design. We were using Harris Gates SW100 transmitters, which I think are early 70s design. These have pulse width modulator RF amplifiers in them, so you can use this high quality, high intensity audio processing that I was talking about. We've still got four Harris SW100A transmitters in service, but we've just recently, in the last 6 months, added three Continental transmitters to Shepparton's lineup. Two of those are second-hand. They've actually come from Guam down to Darwin when the Darwin station in Australia was being operated by Christian Voice, and then when Christian Voice moved out of Darwin, our transmission contractor picked up those two transmitters, and there's a third brand spanking new Continental there. So the seven transmitters at Shepparton, still 100 kilowatts, but we make those 100 kilowatts work very hard.
Now, Radio Australia for the Asia-Pacific region, Radio Australia has a very big responsibility because for many countries in the Asia-Pacific and also Southeast Asia, it's one of the main news sources, which has been the main target audience. Now, let's say you take Asia-Pacific, which is a very large area. What percentage of, let's say, depending on where you are, still listen on traditional HF?
That's a good question. It's quite topical because I'm sure your listeners would be aware that the other international broadcasters such as Deutsche Welle and BBC World Service have been reducing their shortwave broadcasts in recent years. But if you look at where they're keeping those shortwave transmissions, they're into countries where it's still a perfectly valid and a very viable medium. And so it is with Radio Australia's shortwave services targeted into the West Pacific, Papua New Guinea, and the Southwest and South Central Pacific, from Solomon Islands, Vanuatu, Fiji, Samoa and Cooks. In those countries, Radio Australia has established FM transmitters. So we have our own small FM transmitters, about 20 of them so far, ranging in power from 300 watts to a kilowatt, and we feed those via satellite. And the satellite service itself is available to listeners if they want to invest in a C-band downlink facility. But we find that our shortwave service still has a very big audience. A couple of reasons for that. Some of these countries still have their domestic services carried on shortwave. Vanuatu recently refurbished its shortwave transmitters and has now restored a 3 megahertz frequency during the evening and a 7 megahertz frequency for daytime broadcasts. And that's the most economic way that some of these Pacific Island communities can cover the broadly distributed islands that make up their countries. Another reason why shortwave is still important to us is even places like Fiji, where we have had FM transmitters in Nandi and in Suva, those transmitters were turned off at gunpoint about 18 months ago. And so, of course, shortwave is now the predominant vehicle for those areas who want to listen to impartial news and current affairs. Indeed, of course, once you're beyond the 30 or 40 kilometre range of the FM transmitter, then you're still looking at either Radio Australia on shortwave or via satellite. It's not just news and current affairs that we provide too. Increasingly, we're being asked by these countries to assist with their emergency disaster preparation. For example, we carry tsunami warnings now when the Australian Bureau of Meteorology, which is our designated tsunami earthquake watch organisation, gets an alert of an earthquake. For example, in Christchurch, we put out the tsunami warnings on Radio Australia to all those areas in the Pacific that might be affected. So, just to recap, in those countries where shortwave is still used to carry the domestic services, and where economical, i.e. battery-powered analog receivers, are still to be found, then shortwave's fine. And remember, in these countries, people just want good news, current affairs information. They want educational programs, a little bit of entertainment. We still put a little bit of music onto our Tokpisin services for Melanesia and Papua New Guinea. They're accepting of the quality that you'll get with a shortwave broadcast. And as I said, it's certainly economical in terms of battery consumption, and that's been the biggest problem in my mind with the take-up of digital radio, whether it's DAB, DAB Plus, HD in North America, or indeed DRM on any particular frequency band. All the receivers, and I've measured quite a few of them, all the digital receivers have appallingly high battery drain. I remember last year I tested the UniWave DRM receiver, which impressed me as a DRM receiver, but it was drawing, I think from memory, 450 to 500 milliamps off C-cells. And batteries are quite an expensive proposition in the Pacific. That kind of power consumption from disposable batteries is just not sustainable, and it's one of the issues that the receiver manufacturers have to address. I'm sorry that Sanjin hasn't produced an affordable and economical, and I emphasise economical, DRM receiver. I think they could find quite a market for it, particularly now that India has identified DRM for its domestic services.
South Australia, I was born. Heave away, all away in South Australia, round Cape Horn, bound for South Australia. Heave away, you rolling kings. Heave away, all away. Heave away, oh, hear me sing, bound for South Australia.
When I sailed across the sea, heave away, all away, my girl said she'd be true to me, bound for South Australia.
And I was speaking there with Nigel Holmes, the frequency manager of Radio Australia. And in an upcoming edition of Media Network Plus, we will bring you part two of our conversation.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Corey 105, repeat speed 222 journal.
Speed 220, Corey 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
If there's an edition of Media Network Plus that you would like us to present for the best of Media Network Plus, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is pcjmedia@gmail.com. That's pcjmedia@gmail.com. Do let us know. Thank you for listening. 73 and 88 to the ladies.
Yeah.